News Radio 690 KTSM presents the second hour of the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. And now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
I think we got this all figured out because we're going to start the second hour like we normally do, with an El Paso History Moment produced by Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance. Her topic today is about opera in early El Paso.
Culture comes to the pass. December 15, 1887, the Meyer Opera House opened the decorative iron gates that led to the entrance of what was then considered one of the most beautiful buildings in El Paso. The Meyer had a stunningly ornate Romanesque exterior with an opulent interior showcasing an octagonal ceiling that rose to a dome with eight large panel paintings by a Chicago artist set into the ceiling. The opera house with chandeliers and stage lighting was lit by natural gas, and performers proclaimed the Meyer the best-lit stage in the West. The Meyer would be the place to perform along the theater circuit from New York to Los Angeles by the top performers of the day. Actor Edwin Booth, international opera star Sarah Bernhardt, actress Nellie Boyd, and the infamous Lily Langtry, the toast of Europe and the subject of a long one-sided love affair by hanging judge Roy Bean, to name a few. The Meyer Opera House would continue to play an important role not only as a cultural center, but the hub of gossip with its checkered history, as the third floor of the building in its end days became the last brothel of the famous Madam Etta Clark. The Meyer Opera House would burn down November 15, 1905. More history next time on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
So why don't we have more opera houses anymore, Melissa?
Oh, that's a shame. It was quite the show place, too. I mean, like you said, all the stars that have performed there, and there's some that there aren't even mentioned in this one. I mean, it could have gone on, but it was an incredible place. And before I forget, though, you'll find a lot of the pictures of the Opera House. You can find that at some different places I'm going to mention here. We have some great partners we want to recognize in El Paso, History, Education, and Photographs. And the El Paso History Alliance Facebook page, which has lots of historic pictures, information, and preservation information, is managed by Max Grossman and Mark Stone. And then the oldest of the Facebook pages in El Paso, covering the whole region, is Remember in El Paso When. There you'll find an extensive archive of pictures, historical information, and more. This page is managed by Barbara Given-Bainey, who is chief administrator, and she has a fantastic team helping her out.
BGB, we call her.
BGB.
Well, she does good stuff, and I'm glad she's doing it, although I think it drives her crazy half the time, but that's okay. She seems to be okay with that. Anyway, Barbara Given-Bainey, chief administrator, other administrators, Margaret Smith, Rick Duncan, Paul Louie, moderators Ken Weiss and Craig Hayes, and we thank all of you for doing what you do on that page. A lot of history going on here. Bernie, let's get back into this. Bernie, sorry, are you still with us by phone?
I am definitely with you.
You're there. Where did we last leave off? Where did we leave off? Oh, we were going to talk about the number 11, and that would be the picture of the people, various little villages that turned into El Paso. You had Concordia, you had Hart's Mill, McGoffinsville, and then Frontera around on the side there by Keystone. And Frontera was actually just a spot where people gathered with their wagons waiting for the river to go down, right?
Well, it initially started out with a gentleman by the name of T. Francis White. Decided he was going to establish a customs house and a mercantile at the most likely easiest place to cross the Rio Grande River. They saw the settlement taking place after the United States spent $12 million and bought most of New Mexico territory, Arizona territory, and Southern California from Mexico. And historically, crossing the Rio Grande River down by where the La Toma took place was just too treacherous. Crossing up by Hart's Mill was too treacherous. And this point, which was on the sort of the northwest area section of Cristo Rey, seemed to be the best. It was a wider span, but it was slower moving water and easier to cross. So when White put that together, his whole idea was this could be a great place to start a city. And he thought also that he would couple with the settlement along the border between here in California and here in the Gulf of Mexico, that the military could use that as their outpost. But when Van Horn came into town to set up the post opposite of Paso del Norte, now called Juarez, he decided to rent some property from Juan Ponce de León's new owner, which was Benjamin Franklin Coons. So he was downtown. Well, that kind of set a little bit of a problem for White in that he didn't have the income he anticipated from the military. Yeah, and he ran into a little bit of problem with the Mexican officials in trying to establish the hierarchy of who was going to control that property, the customs house, and so on, with the U.S. government. And so he eventually moved north, and we don't have any clue at this point in time where he went. We think he went through Albuquerque and further north, but we really can't tie that down. It'd be kind of interesting to do a little research on White and what took place.
Let's look at the next graphic then, number 12. That's Santa Fe Trail and Chihuahua Trail. And what happened was you had people coming from Missouri over to Santa Fe, which had been established years, century earlier and a half earlier, by the Spaniards, and then they came right down the Camino Real through El Paso into Chihuahua. And that's what, not Joseph McGoffin, but James Wiley McGoffin was a trader on that trail, and that's how he got so tuned into El Paso. He ended up in Chihuahua, married a Mexican woman, and had a son named Joseph, and that Joseph came back to El Paso and became mayor. So that's why we say Joseph McGoffin was the first Mexican-American mayor in El Paso, because he was born in Chihuahua to a Mexican mother, grew up speaking Spanish, and all those things qualify him to make him a Mexican-American, even though his name was McGoffin. So that's kind of weird. But anyway, and also another one there, go to 12A. 12A has got Zebulon Pike came down and Susan McGoffin, and now she was different. She was related to those McGoffins, but how?
She was James Wiley McGoffin's sister-in-law.
Ah.
McGoffin and his brother headed up a trade organization out of Missouri into Santa Fe and then south down to Chihuahua. And she traveled with the family and actually came from a fairly well-to-do family. I believe her father was a governor. And so there were some good ties, some good strong ties, and they were going to travel with Alexander Doniphan when he was marching west to Santa Fe to ultimately sign the deal on the property with Mexico when we bought the property from Mexico. And they were going in, the commanding officer was a gentleman by the name of Kearney, and he was in charge. Well, Susan had some health issues take place. She was trying to have, but she was pregnant twice, and so unfortunately lost the babies in the route. So they could not travel with Doniphan and Kearney when they were continuing their moves west and south. So they were lagging behind for a short period of time as they were coming down the trail. And like Doniphan before her with his soldiers, they camped in an area just a little bit away from where Keystone is right now. Actually, it's at the corner of Summit Park, and Doniphan is where White's Frontera Rancho was, and that's where Doniphan encamped, and then subsequently the McGoffins camped also.
Oh, they,
so
hey, Bernie,
a popular place.
They established that Circle K right there. I've been in it. It's really good.
Well, it didn't, things were pretty busy, so they ended up having to put a Walmart there.
That's on the other corner. All right, back to the reality. I know I'm messed up there. But take a look at the next page. You know, Bernie, I'm figuring out.
Let me go back and finish something about Zebulon Pike. He came in
early
1800s, roughly 20 years before McGoffin came through here and Stevenson came through. And when Pike was coming through, it was sort of like a replication of what took place up north with Lewis and Clark. The president of the United States wanted to explore the Southwest, and so Pike had a number of soldiers traveling with him, and they traveled into Santa Fe and that area and then headed south. Well, when they got to Santa Fe, they were arrested by the Mexican soldiers for spying. By the time he got to El Paso area, he was pretty much freed by them. He wasn't tied up anymore, and he was learning a little bit of Spanish, and he had befriended the soldiers, his captors. And he wrote in his journal, which I find fascinating, that as he was rounding the bend approximately where Keystone is, going into the valley there by Hart's Mill, he noticed on both sides of the river, as far as the eye could see, it was lined with grape vineyards. It's kind of hard to imagine today when it looks so beige along the Rio Grande when there is water. But it was a very popular place to grow wine grapes. And that's a whole other story we could talk about later.
Oh, my God.
Tragically, a few years later, when in the War of 1812, when Pike was in charge of the soldiers going into Canada, they had a pretty good idea that they could capture Canada for the United States. Unfortunately, there was a tragic explosion, and the English armory caught fire and exploded, and he was one of the soldiers on the U.S. side that was killed accidentally by the explosion.
Oh, boy. You know, Bernie, I'm figuring out we're not going to get through this page at all. We're going to have to
we'll
cut this in about half and come back in a while and finish the darn thing because there's so much that has gone on in El Paso that what I thought ambitiously that when we started this whole thing, we'll get up to 1930. We're not going to get anywhere near it. But because look where we are. Go to 12B, the trails that came through here. We talked about the Chihuahua Trail, the Camino Real. They are the same trail. That's what people need to realize. They're the same thing. And the Mission Trail in El Paso, that's the same trail. But different parts have different names. The whole long thing is a Camino Real. The whole long thing is also the Chihuahua Trail. Later years, they called it. And then down part in southern El Paso County, that is what we call the El Paso Mission Trail. But it actually connects over to Juarez again. And back in the day, there was no political boundaries. So it connects to Juarez, so that mission, and then headed straight up from there across the river at Hart's Mill all the way up into top of New Mexico. So that whole thing is a trail. But then look at the next picture. Look at all of those trails. Talk about those trails.
Yeah, there was a pressing need for a route, a transportation route from the East Coast to the West Coast. And one of the first that was put together was the Bankhead Highway. And that was that whole idea was conjured up by Senator Bankhead out of the South. He was Tallulah Bankhead's uncle, ironically.
Wow.
He came up with the idea and the concept. Unfortunately, they started this program circa 1915 timeframe to put this together and to pave a road from the East Coast to the West Coast from Washington, D.C. to San Diego. And the Bankhead was the first to be completed, and that was followed by the old Spanish Trail, a route that went from Florida to the West Coast, and the Lees Highway, which also went from the South in Georgia to the West Coast, just to have a contiguous highway to route people. Now, this is post-railroad, which came through here in 1881, but it was something with people saw the advent of the automobile as being a tool not only for people's enjoyment, but ultimately for military transportation and so on, and for freight transportation east to west or west to east. And this was the only route that they could take, which was open virtually every day of the year, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, because if you went any further north on the Rocky Mountains, Sierra Mountains, you are automatically run into snow in the wintertime, sometimes early fall or late spring, you'd have snow up there. So they adopted or went after the southern route, and those are the three that I mentioned, Lee's Highway, Bankhead Highway, and the Old Spanish Trail.
Let's talk just briefly, because of all of that, let's talk what Lincoln did when it came time to putting the railroads through from the East Coast to the West Coast. The clear open route would have been through El Paso, clear weather all year round. Why did he not put it through El Paso? He went way up into Utah. Why did he do that?
Well, there's a couple of things that took place on or about the time that Lincoln was president. Just prior to him, the Butterfield Trail was coming through here. And when the Civil War started in 1861, that put an end to the 2.5 years of the Butterfield Trail going through here. And it ended up from that point on being sort of franchise arrangements with smaller organizations running the stagecoaches. But when they were talking about a transcontinental railroad, there was a push to run the trails or run the railroad through the South. And that was predominantly controlled by the southern states. But the northern states were astute enough to see that there were some problems that were bubbling up in the South, and they did not want to endorse, condone, or support a southern rail route,
right?
Just in case something would take place between the north and the southern states. They didn't want the South to have the opportunity to move freight, move their military, and so on a railroad. So they opted to go the northern route. Hence, you go through Utah and those states.
All right. When we come back, let's put up that Butterfield Overland Trail picture again and talk about that, because you and I went out and shot that in the desert one day. That was a strange day, but it was very productive, I was thinking. Anyway, that was cool. All right, Melissa, you got any more people there looking at us on Facebook?
Oh, I've been kind of going back and forth with some people here. We have Margie Davis is listening to us. We have a young lady. Let me get back to her. We have Beatrice Soledad. She's out in Northeast El Paso. She loves listening to the show. Irene Cerna, she has talked about the Ascarity family and the Spanish grant that they had. Just a lot of great people just checking in and putting. I love it because people start sharing facts like, oh, no, this is this or this. Or they share some information they think we may have missed, which is great. That's how we learn.
Well, it's kind of a town hall meeting we do here. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But talking about history, it keeps us sane and it keeps us safe, because if we start talking about local politics, then the whole wheels fall off. That's why we have a show Monday through Friday on KTSM AM 690. That show is called Talk El Paso, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Take your, what do you call that squad, Andrew? The Skeptic Squad goes on that show, and they throw mud all over the place, and he can handle it. Like I tell people, Andrew's been debating for years, and he's been debating me since he was 4 years old. Anyway, he's in the control room today. Thank you for what you're doing. And Monday through Friday, he is the guy on air taking all that heat. And I think people are getting a kick out of it, because that's actually a popular show these days. Monday through Friday, Talk El Paso. All right, taking a break or call. Throw the number out if somebody has a thought. We'll take it.
Okay. Now, if they'd like to call us, 544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
El Paso History TV is now available for free on YouTube.com. Take a look at recent ABC 7 news reports by Bernie Sargent on El Paso History TV about Waco tanks, the Franklin Mountains, Concordia Cemetery, and more. The YouTube channel also has more than 100 videos about El Paso history with lectures, documentaries, and various history clips. Go to YouTube.com/El Paso History TV and find out how Texas history begins in El Paso.
This is Andrew J. Polk with News Radio 690 KTSM. The COVID-19 coronavirus is still spreading in our community, and anyone who has been exposed or is showing symptoms is asked to get tested. Information on free testing is available at epstrong.org. Find details on how to register for the vaccine at epcovidvaccine.com. eprenthelp.org has resources for tenants and landlords on rental assistance, and epbusinessstrong.org has details on grant and loan funding. From the News Radio 690 KTSM News Desk, I'm Andrew J. Polk. Hulk.
The Good Assassins Hunting the Butcher podcast is part spy thriller, part detective story. Best-selling author and journalist Stephen Talty tells the pulse-pounding tale of an undercover operation to track down a Nazi killer.
A part of history that seems so bizarre to me that it couldn't have been real. But in 1964, the Israelis decided that Herbert Zuckers had to die.
Listen to The Good Assassins Hunting the Butcher on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
One-on-One with Susan Eisen.
Setting my very first diamond 30 years ago in my garage late at night took me 5 hours to do. Since then, our priority is the quality of our work.
When it comes to the highest quality control standards, visit SusanEisen.com. One-on-One with Susan Eisen.
Every diamond in our store is personally selected and graded by me to ensure you're getting more value than what you are paying for. That sets us apart.
When it comes to expert advice on diamonds, visit SusanEisen.com.
I'm Rocky Moselle with StarRegistry.com. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice. Now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for the hottest gift.
Woke culture is threatening our freedoms and even our police. Now, Grant Stinchfield exposes woke's secret agenda and its hidden players. Watch Stinchfield at 8 p.m. Eastern tonight on Newsmax TV as he reveals the dangers. Stinchfield gives you the cold, hard truth you need to know. Find Newsmax TV on all major cable systems or get it free on Roku, YouTube, Zumo, Pluto, and smart TVs. Download the free Newsmax app on your smartphone. Woke is dangerous, so watch Stinchfield on Newsmax tonight.
News Radio 690, KTSM El Paso.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Hey, we're going to do this. It's going to be an interesting thing here next week. Al Borrego will be in. He's our guest to describe a new nonprofit that he's created called the Cultural Heritage Society of the Camino Real de Tierra Adentro. This is big history stuff he's working on there. And from his San Elizario, Texas location on the Camino Real, he looks both north and south to explain this very first King's Highway in North America. April 24th, Hour 1, our topic is the ham radio business and ham radio operators that are kind of a hobby but kind of a business. Anyway, they're going to talk about what they've been doing. They've been around for a long time. And in the second hour, our topic is the gold prospectors of El Paso and the West Texas and Southern New Mexico region. It's a group of people who plan to find gold anywhere, and they look all over the place. I think these are the guys that are digging up Oro Grande. We'll ask them. May 1st, Mark Howe's coming in. He's back from the International Boundary Water Commission. He's got a new archive that he found, a bunch of material found by Randy Corbin of his grandfather when he cleaned out the granddad's house. The guy was an early commissioner and apparently has all kinds of notes and neat stuff, including a letter he got from Anson Mills. So there's a lot of history coming up here in the near future. What do you got?
Well, I just wanted to remind we were talking a couple of weeks ago to the history of the Archaeology Museum. Well, good news. As of April 8th, two El Paso museums are open to visitors for the first time in about a year, the Museum of Art and the Museum of History. And the new exhibit at the History Museum is going to be really cool. It's on lowriders, so that would be pretty interesting, because that actually is a pretty good culture exhibit to have, because everybody knows about lowriders. We had them in Los Angeles. You had them here, and I remember them as a kid. And then also their hours will be 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and, of course, they'll be following the regular protocol for COVID, which is masks and social distancing. So definitely get a chance to go down there. You can call for private tours by calling 915-212-0320. So give them a call, get down there, and get back out and start seeing things again.
And also, they've got all kinds of neat stuff in that History Museum, generic El Paso. But I want to petition the city council and whoever's in charge of museums to also open up the Archaeology Museum. I mean, they need to restaff some things out there because some people left. But we had Jeff Romney on here a couple of weeks ago. That's a fabulous museum, and it's one of a kind. I mean, people don't generally have an archaeology museum in their city. They've got one museum. They lump it all together. We are very fortunate to have that out there on Trans Mountain Road. And on a given year, we got poppies everywhere. This is not a given year, apparently. So, but the museum is still there, and it's in the middle of what's called Wilderness Park.
But also, can I point out, people can go to the archaeology website, the El Paso Museum of Archaeology. They can go to the website and check out some of the exhibits and information they've got online to kind of support them that way until they get back open.
Oh, yeah. And I sure hope they open up, because that's a wonderful place. The pottery collection, we went over that when Jeff was on the radio with us. And that's a fabulous thing out there. So make sure that city, open that thing back up too, please. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, all right. Give them somebody to help them run it.
Well, they need, staff it, because, I mean, you know, we're paying the taxes. Let's put them into that. All right, Butterfield Overland Stage. We got picture number 13 on that. Bernie, let's talk about that, because that was you and I shooting that day. What's going on in your house? You doing a vacuum cleaner?
William House. That was an interesting story. Quite by accident, I was actually at the tailgate party at Sun Bowl, and I got a phone call from a teacher in California who was trying to explain to me that he was working to reenact the William Huff wagon train, and to which I said, can we talk when I get home? Because it's pretty noisy there in the parking lot at a tailgate party. What ended up happening is this gentleman, Bill Kautz, has a private school in California, and he has reenacted a route that William Huff took from Houston, Texas, to the gold mine fields of California. Huff was a pretty well-educated individual, and this is going back in the 1840s, 1850s time frame. He was quite learned and had started a newspaper, but when he learned of the gold strikes in California, he decided that he was going to go out there and seek his fortune for his family. And Bill Kautz had reenacted the route from Arizona to the minefields, but he had never done the portion from Houston to Arizona through this part of the country. And what he wanted to do is see if he could enlist some help from people in Texas to stage this. And we volunteered to help out wherever we could. And it ended up with Jackson's help filming it and the Buffalo Soldiers riding along with them. We loaded up the wagons in Socorro, New Mexico. And then from Socorro went to Waco Tanks,
Texas.
Waco Tanks. We traveled back through the little valley back there, which is really interesting to do, too, because as you're traveling through this area that's been eroded away, it was a river, was eroded away, you could see people's names written on the walls 15 to 20 feet above where we were, dating back to the 1840s and 1850s. And that was the route that ultimately also became the Butterfield Trail's northern route coming into El Paso from San Antonio, Austin, those areas there. And I asked the question, how did they write them so far up? Did they carry ladders with them? And, you know, being the blonde California-educated person that I am, I didn't realize that what happened is over time, all that area had been eroded out.
So oh, yeah.
They weren't standing on ladders. They were riding off the wagons.
It was weird to see that. Yeah, weird to see that. Well, also, Bernie, yeah. So it was Socorro, Texas, that we picked up the trail with these people. They got a whole bunch of kids out of some Socorro schools, and they actually got on the wagon trains, spent the night out on a trail. One of the first things they did was go, they went across the county and ended up in Waco Tanks and spent the night there. They had a couple of follow vehicles with some tents and stuff. But other than that, these kids were walking across the same Butterfield Trail that the original people used to use. And so I went and saw these kids once they got back home, and I asked them, what did you miss the most? And I was expecting to hear, oh, my Walkman or my phone with my music on it. Do you remember what it was that they told me on the interview, the one thing that they missed the most when they were out on that trail?
Well, a couple of them told me the internet.
No, that was not it. It was porcelain.
Porcelain. Oh, yes, the bathroom.
Toilets.
Yes.
Those kids were out there in the middle of nowhere doing their thing. And they walked. It was amazing. All right, coming back here in a minute.
Well, you know, what was exciting about this, Jackson,
what?
If I could throw this in there, is what Bill Kautz did is he brought with him 12 or 13 kids from California.
Right.
They stayed on that wagon train the whole length of the trip down to Austin. But what the Texas people did is every county they went into, they would load up 12 to 13 fresh kids from that county, and they would travel through the county. So they did this all the way down to Austin.
Wow.
And the this is El Paso, or Destination El Paso, was gracious enough to give me an airline ticket down to Austin to meet them when they showed up at the state capitol. It was really an exciting event.
Well, he took the diary down there to the gravesite of one of these guys and made a dedication with the Texas Parks and Wildlife. We had video from them as well. That turned out to be an interesting television program. I think we've got that on the Historic Sites and Markers. I'll have to go find out where it is. All right, taking a break here. Come back. We'll look at the stagecoach in action, because that's the other thing that the Butterfield Trail did. That, I mean, the Old West was, El Paso was it back in the day. We'll talk about that coming back here. And Melissa, you got more people on Facebook?
Yes, I do.
Not a lot this morning. I've pretty much gotten out through everybody I announced before. Irene was kind enough. Bernie asked her if she was related to the Irene Serna. Wondering if she related to Marcelino Serna, and she said no, she's not. Her family got her later on, but we really appreciate her giving her information to us. So get out there on Facebook and Facebook us. I may be a little confused. I'm doing between two computers today, but we'll try to get your information and your questions and comments in.
Fair enough. Taking a break. You're back in just a moment. Hit the button, Andrew.
Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, you save an average of $889. State Farm agent Ralph Dickerson is ready to help you combine home and auto and save here in El Paso. Call 915-581-0000 today. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Average annual per household savings based on a 2019 national survey by State Farm of new policyholders who reported savings by switching to State Farm.
Hi, I'm host Robin Roberts, and on a new podcast from iHeartRadio, COVID-19, Immunity in Our Community, we'll hear from Americans on the front lines and the doctors and medical experts who convinced them and their loved ones to roll up their sleeves and get vaccinated. Listen to COVID-19 Immunity in Our Community on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. We can do this.
How clean is your nose? Most airborne germs and allergens invade through the nose, your body's air filter, its first line of defense. You wash your hands and brush your teeth, but what about your nose? Did you know there's an easy way to keep your nose clean and help your body protect itself? It's called Navage Nasal Care. Navage uses powered suction to clean your nose by flushing out pollen, mucus, bacteria, and viruses. Millions use Navage for fast, all-natural relief from sinus congestion and allergies, and to breathe better, sleep deeper, snore less, and feel healthier without drugs. Navage is easy to use, affordable, and it comes with an absolute guarantee of satisfaction. And 50,000 independent online reviews averaging 4.7 stars show just how much people love their Navage. You wash your hands and brush your teeth every day. Now you can clean your nose and help protect your health with Navage. At Navage.com, CVS, Walgreens, Bed Bath & Beyond, Target, and Rite Aid. Navage. N-A-V-A-G-E. Make good nasal hygiene your new normal with Navage. Clean nose, healthy life.
Changing your busy lifestyle for the health of it isn't always easy. Pecans are a nutritional powerhouse of flavor that can help keep your snacks on track when you're on the go. And the best part, a handful does the trick. Learn more at AmericanPecan.com.
How do you protect yourself from the new forms of the coronavirus? Here you go. Got a mask that fits good and snug? Perfect. Now, give your neighbors at least 6 feet of space and avoid crowds because all that stuff still works too. Look, I'll definitely get my vaccine when it's my turn, but now isn't the time to let your guard or your mask down.
We can do this. Learn more at cdc.gov/coronavirus. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
El Paso's News Radio, 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso Souvenirs and Gift Shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
I'm ready. Are you ready? This week only in El Paso, Inc.
U.S. Rep. Veronica Escobar sat down with El Paso, Inc. to talk about everything under the sun, or El Paso sun, from immigration solutions to the future of the filibuster.
Home sales are red hot in El Paso, and your property taxes might have just as much of a burn.
That's the truth.
Oh, yeah.
UTEP has released a 10-year strategic plan, which includes strengthening the public radio station KTEP and launching a new business center.
El Paso's Business Journal, El Paso, Inc., is available for home or business delivery.
To receive El Paso Inc., order online at elpasoinc.com.
Here comes something sound familiar. Sunday night at 10:35 p.m. on ABC 7, U.S. Congresswoman Veronica Escobar brought a delegation to El Paso this week to show lawmakers firsthand the situation at the border so they could find solutions. ABC 7 is working with their news partners at El Paso Inc. to bring you an extended interview with Congresswoman Veronica Escobar so you can hear her perspective on pressing issues. And it's part of an hour-long interview Escobar gave longtime reporter David Crowder.
You can read more about it on ElPasoInc.com and hear about it on ABC 7 Extra, Sunday night at 10:35 p.m. only on ABC 7, where news comes first.
And does it ever. Bernie Sard, you're still sitting out there, Bernie?
Yes, sir, sure am.
Okay, we got to talk about a few things here. Stagecoach is coming up here, but we got a guy that probably should be on a stagecoach. His name is Prince. Hey, Prince, got you on the radio. What's up?
Hi there. It's been a while.
Prince.
How's the stagecoach business, Prince?
I really want to thank you for the comment about the archaeology museum.
Oh, and, yes.
And the city really needs to get on the ball with that. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because the El Paso Archaeological Society, the oldest archaeological society in the state of Texas, is celebrating its centennial next year.
That's right.
And, oh, cool.
And we're actually locked out of our laboratory that we built, that we paid for, and we built. We're locked out of it by the city. And until it reopens, that is cutting into the planning process for our centennial celebration.
It's at the museum, right? It's at that same building. It's in the same building.
That's right, yeah. Uh-huh. And so a lot of people don't realize that our archaeological society actually designed and furnished the first exhibits in that building.
Oh, yeah.
And so we've got a lot going on in planning for the centennial, and it's going to be a big event, and we're hoping that we'll get a lot of support from all over Texas. There are not very many archaeology museums in the whole state.
No.
And we're
no.
very fortunate because we have such a rich prehistory here that it is covered. Now, as far as stagecoaches are concerned,
yes,
I really do miss the great Day of the Cowboy celebrations that Bernie Sargent and others organized. And that also reminds me about the Four Centuries 81 celebration that we had. And every year, the city put on a great celebration in the Civic Center. And I really hate to see that great facility just sit there day after day, week after week, month after month, empty. And when we could be having big celebrations of all of the different events over the centuries, not many cities have 4.5 centuries of history. And so,
well, you know, Princeton, one thing that the city could do, the county sort of does, is promote El Paso for its history. We don't have to invent that. We don't have to build a water park. We don't have to bring in six guns and We don't have to bring in six flags over Texas. We've already got six guns. We don't have to bring in an amusement park to try to attract tourists. Just tell them what happened here. I mean, the Mexican Revolution alone, the gunfight history alone, all of that, if it were promoted correctly, this town could make a fortune on what we've already got without spending a bazillion dollars on small arenas that nobody's ever going to go to.
Right.
Oh, I hate that.
We've had a week-long celebration every year for many years, and it's really too bad, you know, that and there were maybe 50 different organizations that put on their story and told their part
you know,
about El Paso's history.
Well, you know,
we really need that again.
One person told me they thought it'd be great if we had a museum on every corner downtown to a different group of people or to a different event, and that could almost happen. You've got the Pancho Villa Museum sort of forming all by itself, some private owners. Bernie, that's a private building down there, isn't it, that Pancho Villa Stash House?
Yes, sir, it sure is. There's two buildings side by side that are owned by the same gentleman, and he's done a great job restoring the stash house. And as soon as this COVID thing goes away, or we're safe to travel again, he's going to open that back up, as well as the facility next door, which will be a restaurant slash bar.
And we focused on that a couple of weeks ago with the Pancho Villa discussion with Cindy Medina. And the thing is, there is so much down. You could do, Prince is saying, something every week, or at least every two or three weeks, on a major event or a major occurrence or major people that came through El Paso. And why the city is just sitting on this, they prefer to go book something into the Plaza Theater. Well, that's nice. Do that, too. But they're negating the history because they don't care to look at it. I think they're idiots. Hey, they're idiots.
You know, a thought would be is when if we could ever get Durango to turn into what we've all talked about, a possible cultural area for people to be, that would be a perfect place to do things
good
like
luck.
This. And I'll bet you they'd get a ton of traffic.
Stage everything you need down there, call that Old Town El Paso and be correct.
Right. Another thing is the El Paso International Museum of Art.
Oh, yes.
There's a great opportunity there to bring out the art and the culture of all of the other cultures besides the Hispanic culture, which the city has decided that they want to emphasize. And so that's another opportunity to have events there for all of the other cultures that make up the history of the city.
Oh, it's a great idea. Well, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, dude. Maybe I'll see you at Pepe's out there. Thank you. Thank you a lot. We'll see you at Pepe's if you're going to go. I don't think the sergeants aren't going to make it to Pepe's, are they? No.
No, we're not going to make it today.
No, we're going to go out to lunch in our backyard.
Okay, fair enough. We'll wave at you over. We'll give you a Zoom call from Pepe's.
Can I throw something in real quick?
Sure.
William Henry Mee, he just loved our talk and our rant about selling history as tourism and for a marketing draw. So thank you, William Henry.
Oh, where is he?
I don't know.
I see him on Facebook. Okay, you know, but see, that's the point. El Paso has got better history than most anywhere. See, El Paso is an intersection, and it's caused greatly by the Rio Grande. And with the Rio Grande sitting there, you had people coming north and south forever. It wasn't just Oñate. I mean, there were people before him and all kinds of animal trails and everything. But the whole idea, once they started going the other way, east to west with the gold rush, OMG, and then they put the railroads in, El Paso has been a crossroads of all kinds of people and history. And what we're doing today is just trying to go through some of it. And, Bernie, we're not going to make it all the way through. Oh, my goodness. We got about half a page to go left. So we got to take a break here and come back and do that. When we come back, Andrew, put up number 14, the stagecoach. That's a great picture. We'll see if Bernie can tell me where that picture came from. Okay, taking a break here. Call us if you need to,
544-5876 or 544-KTSM.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the one and only margarita from the Cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
With Merrill Guided Investing, you have the option to work with an advisor at a low cost and minimum. Get started at MerrillEdge.com/investing goals. Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner, and Smith Incorporated, both a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor. Member SIPC.
The Good Assassins Hunting the Butcher podcast is part spy thriller, part detective story. Best-selling author and journalist Stephen Talty tells the pulse-pounding tale of an undercover operation to track down a Nazi killer.
A part of history that seems so bizarre to me that it couldn't have been real. But in 1964, the Israelis decided that Herbert Zuckers had to die.
Listen to The Good Assassins Hunting the Butcher on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Deep down, you knew it was coming, and you know there's nothing you can do to stop it. And now it's here.
Tax-mageddon!
Federal debt now exceeds the size of the entire economy, and Congress continues to spend like drunken sailors. Taxes are going up, and your retirement savings are going to be taxed to smithereens. But there's one proven time-tested strategy that lets you legally pay zero taxes on your hard-earned retirement money. And you can learn all about it in a free report from Bank on Yourself. Get it now at LegallyPayZeroTax.com. This strategy also grows your wealth safely and predictably every year, even when the market tanks. And it gives you penalty-free access to your savings. Yes, you can protect your money from the next stock market crash and from
Tax-mageddon.
To get this free report and save your retirement, visit LegallyPayZeroTax.com today. That's LegallyPayZeroTax.com. LegallyPayZeroTax.com.
We declare this week iHeart Health Week, an entire week filled with podcasts and playlists on our free iHeart app dedicated to bringing out your very best. Podcasts on fitness, saving money, parenting, and so much more. And hours of playlists to get you moving, like the Classic Rock Workout Playlist, Jock Jams Playlist, and Spin Cycle. We'll even help you fall asleep faster listening to your favorite podcast or playlist. Just set the iHeart Sleep Timer. iHeart Health Week, only on iHeart Radio. number one for music, radio, and podcasts, all in one app.
News Radio 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We're talking all kinds of El Paso early history. We're not going to make it past McGoffinsville, I don't think. We're going to study that a little bit more. Hey, that's where this goes. We get off on tangents and just stay there. But the history of El Paso is worthy, and that's why we do this show. Quick note here for Casner Range. People want to get that declared a national monument. One crowd really working on that is the Frontera Land Alliance. They're working with the Franklin Mountains Wilderness Coalition, El Paso Community Foundation. They want to designate the picturesque 7,081-acre range a national monument. Nice ring to it. You can get a hold of them go to Frontera Land Alliance, and you just Google that. You'll find them in there. So, Melissa, what do you got? You got something?
Well, I just wanted to mention that Keystone Heritage Park in the El Paso Desert Botanical Gardens is located at 4200 Donovan Drive and is open Tuesdays through Sundays, 9 a.m. to sunset. And the gardens are, again, available to rent for your next special event, like a wedding, private parties, tours, and more. Go to KeystoneHeritagePark.com where you can check out the place. And I'll give them a call at 915-584-0563. I've got too many numbers in my head here.
Well, write them down.
And I also... Huh?
Write them down. They'll fall out of your head.
Yeah. Oh, and I also want to put it, we've got one of our upcoming guests, Herbert Fleisch. I always destroy your name, Herbert. Please
Von
forgive
Felich.
Me. I took German. You'd think I'd remember this. He's going to be on the show, in June?
Yeah, we got him in June. He's listening in Winston, wherever.
Winston-Salem.
North Carolina, yeah. Well, we got people.
North Carolina, yeah.
Well, see, the thing is, El Paso history is actually that interesting. That people all over the place are tuning into it. He's one of them. He likes to do the Mexican Revolution stuff and German spies. We'll get him on about that coming up in June. All right, Bernie, we're going to go take a little more detail on the stagecoach business. Andrew, you're going to start with 13A, AA. That's an interesting little picture of pictures. And there are all kinds of and Bernie, this is one you cooked up, this group of pictures, once you see it popping up there. But there's another one right after that I want you to put up, Andrew. It's a stagecoach picture. Bernie, tell me where it came from. Talk about the Butterfield Trail.
Yeah, you know, 13A. If you look at the top left-hand corner, for those of you that are able to Facebook Live with us, that is a picture of wagon trains coming down through the mountain passes. Oh, there's the stagecoach. You know, I don't know where that picture came from, honestly. I have to give credit to... the internet, because I found that and I thought I was really exciting to see that. Melissa and I had the opportunity to actually ride on a stagecoach, at Disneyland or Knott's Berry Farm, but you know, out in the open. And it's pretty exciting, even on paved roads, how these animals behave and how the driver, the teamsters managed to keep these animals in line. We were sitting on it. They were using mules. When they ran stagecoaches, they used mules and horses mainly. Mules would be for heavy stagecoaches, the heavier ones like the Concords and so on. And then the horses would be on the stagecoaches that were lighter in a surface area that was much more conducive to their being able to pull a load. But the mules, the gentleman that was driving this particular coach had a BB gun with him. And I thought, well, you have to shoot them with him? He goes, you just have to shoot them one time and they get the idea.
Oh,
all
my.
All you have to do is hear you shake that BB gun, and they hear the BBs, and they know they need to pay attention.
Yeah, you're kidding. No, you're not kidding, are you? Oh, my God.
No,
I had no idea.
In fact, I got to drive the coach. He gave me the reins, and I kind of went, oh, well, this is different. So now I can say I've driven just about everything from an 18-wheeler to a stagecoach.
And a go-kart. I bet you do the go-kart, too. Well, look at the next don't go there. Let's look at number 15 there, Andrew. That's the marker downtown. And the downtown marker is basically where they had one of their major stagecoach stops, right?
Yes. If you go down to the corner of El Paso and Overland Street, that's actually where the major stop between St. Louis and San Francisco was, almost midpoint between the two. And it was kind of interesting because it was a huge, huge facility with shops, with rooms, with a restaurant, with stables. And it was really a cool building for quite some time. And when the stagecoaches stopped running after the Civil War was over, they changed that to a hospital. And they had a number of Confederate soldiers that were wounded at Glorieta or injured on the trail back from Glorieta when they were retreating from Union forces down south through El Paso on their way to San Antonio. They put them there at the old Butterfield stage facility. That's now a Star Western Wear building is occupies most of that block now.
And you see the thing there, that you see the fares that they charged in the day. It was $100 to go from El Paso either direction, and it was $200 if you wanted to go from like Missouri to California. El Paso being the midway point, if you want to get on there and go one way or the other, it's $100 to get to California, $100 to get to Missouri, and good luck because, I mean, Bernie, those things don't have a lot of shock absorbers on them, do they?
No, they don't.
It's your butt. Your butt is a shock absorber.
It's a rough ride, and they drive 24 hours a day. You know, they'll make periodic stops to change the horses, but that's really about it. You know, if you've got to go to the bathroom, you've got to be fast. You get off the train, do your thing, or off the coach, do your thing. Also, they tried to mandate that you only had 18 inches of room for your posterior.
Oh, no.
So if you're a little wider than that, it's going to be like being on Southwest Airlines on a crowded flight.
Well, do they charge you for it? They charge you more? Goodness gracious. Hey.
Yeah, a year and a half.
You know, I think that picture is actually up at the airport. I think that's where we got that. I'm not sure. We'll have to think about that. All right, Bernie, we got to break it here because we're out of time for a two-hour show. We've only gotten to about half of our pictures. We're going to pick it up another time with the post opposite El Paso, McGoffinsville, Hartsmill. We'll go detail on all of those. There's a lot of El Paso history, folks. Bernie, thank you for working on this and being a part of this today.
My pleasure.
Melissa, we're going to have to see you on the phone again, I guess, next week, the way life goes in the COVID world.
We'll have this down a lot better next week. So.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. We'll figure this. And also, we got it figured out pretty good today. It just took us a little bit of while to figure out everything because people don't realize we have a Zoom call going on in the middle of it between us, and we talk to each other during the break. It's been kind of strange. But El Paso history is worth it. And we're going to come back next week and do this again. Al Borrego will be our guest. See you guys somewhere, but not at Pepe's, right?
That's right. Not this time.
Okay.
Next following couple of weeks, maybe.
I'm going to Pepe's, and I'll eat there for you. Thanks, you guys, for being with us.
You can have my soup for me.
I will. Everybody else, we'll see you next week on the El Paso History Radio Show. Thanks a lot. And Andrew, thank you in the control room very much. Appreciate it. Take care, easy.
Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon, and be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And by State Farm Agent Ralph Dickerson, 581-0000. Thank you for joining us from the studios of News Radio 690 KTSM AM El Paso.